So the title of this talk is probably the shortest title I've ever given to any talk. It just came to me as I was walking here. The title of the talk is Take Me. Take Me. Take Me, yeah. And I just got a mail this morning from my sister in Oxford that said that Yanai, who's a Dharma teacher that we know has been to Israel many times, is giving an evening in Oxford. And the title of the evening is Love in the Time of Extinction. And I think it's a really powerful title. The time of extinction is what the planet is going through, and the way that, you know, huge numbers of species and animals are disappearing and are gone and going, and it's a time of sort of shutting down of the ecology. So how do we have love at that time? And it's that kind of movement which is really important for us to understand. How can we have love? And how can we have trust? And how can we surrender in difficult times? And I think I want to kind of turn up the microscope a little bit and say, okay, difficult times can be just the thoughts that I'm having. How can I love my thoughts? There's such a lot of noise. As soon as I start meditating, I realize what a lot of mess is there, and the cacophony in the mind. And how can I trust it? And how can I, it's just stopping peace and silence. And so we want to quieten our thoughts. But there's a price that we pay, which is that our thoughts come from nature. And if we want to quieten them, stop them, reduce them, undo them, and choose somewhere else called peace, we're entering a place of struggle and non-acceptance and wanting things to be somewhere else, wanting us to be somewhere else, and wanting things to be different. And it applies to our whole life. Wanting things to be different. So it applies to our spiritual life, it applies to our ordinary life. Wanting things to be other than the way they are. So what's the price that we pay for that? What does it do to us as an attitude to our inner world and our outer world? So we need, in the Dharma, we need first of all to be very clear where this voice is coming from. And we need to undo the belief in that voice that says, I want things to be different, and instead look more carefully and see it's a voice of dukkha. Things are wrong as they are. I can't accept things as they are. I need them to be different. It's just we need to look at that and see it clearly as the voice of dukkha that is working in us and having results. So it may be quite subtle. We may, I just don't like these thoughts. Okay, fair enough, you don't like these thoughts. But should know that there is dukkha behind that. Wanting things to be different. And partly the problem is that we forget that we're not in control. We are still manifesting a habit of control. And really, our inner life, we have two choices with every experience. We can either manifest, say, there is dukkha, I need to change something, things are not good the way they are, I need to make a change, I need to control, I need to stop something, and that is a voice of struggle. I need to change something. I am against something. And there is friction in that. Chikuch. There is me, the self, against an experience. Basic friction. I am here and I want something to be different from what it is. So there is a basic opposition, a friction, chikuch, from the me and the world. So the other choice is trust, which is to dance with things as they are. I'm not in control. I'm going to just dance with the changing world that exists. I'm not going to let dukkha run the show and run my life. I'm going to dance with things. Okay, we talked about this, you know, just about everybody would say, well, wait a minute, that means that I shouldn't, things, I have to just not change anything and be a kind of a vegetable. Or even more than a vegetable, daisa, porridge, and just go, Of course not. But I'm talking about, because we are acting anyway in life, we can't stop acting. Everything we do is an action. Every word, every thought is an action. We are going to be acting anyway. But the question is, are we acting from trust or are we acting from fear and struggle? I remember my old friend Erica, and like, she was feisty and she was a spiritual teacher and a crazy woman. And wonderful friend. And she said, and she's very much in an alternative world, and she said she had cancer of the breast like 30 years before she died, like at the age of 60. And she was really against, and she's a fighter. She's fighting the doctors, and she's fighting the system, and she's fighting. In the end, she said, wait a minute, I can't fight this anymore. I'm going to have radiotherapy. I'm going to let them give me Cranot radiotherapy. And she said that she went into the machine and she decided to totally let go and let the machine heal her completely and forever. And so she imagined this great healing sun, the radiation, just going through her system and cleaning everything and warming everything and purifying everything. And she said, I cured myself of cancer and the machine radiation with together with me. And then it was cured. She was finished with it. But so we think, you know, I think sickness is a good example because it's very extreme. Who of us wouldn't say, I want to stop this, I want to get rid of this thing I'm against. But we should also be aware that there's a price to pay for struggle. And there is another place to be, to say, okay, the body is talking, I am with you. And let together we will heal each other, we will be together. So instead of against and wanting things to be different, say yes, we're going to go on a journey together. and I'm with you. I trust you. This is what's happening. I trust your body. This is what you're telling me. You're doing what you know. I'm with you. So trust is an attitude and a relationship. It's not about outcomes, what will happen. It's about how we are with our experience. And it's about surrender. And surrender is actually a power. We think struggle is a power, but actually surrender is also a power. Surrender, it must root, but it's also kniya. Yeah, it's not sort of saying, I'm not doing anything. It's saying, I'm going to do things, but like Zen, you know, in Aikido, or in Tai Chi, or in Qigong, I'm going to be active with an atmosphere of surrender to allow things to happen and work with them rather than struggle against. So it's like this, it's like inviting things in for a cup of tea or inviting your enemy for a cup of tea, and you'll find a wise way with trust of making change in the situation. So it's an attitude. And in life, in the journey of life and in the journey of our spiritual life, we're going to meet lots of demons. Arbe shedim. We're going to meet them. They're these thoughts and those thoughts and this issues and unconscious problems and obstacles, michsholim on the way. And, you know, we're going to find them on the path. We're going to meet our demons. And as in the mythology, if we love them, they turn into princes. This is the other part of the quote from Rilke. If we love our demons, instead of seeing them as demons, we see them as beings that need our love and need us to embrace them and to see them as they are and give them respect and give them interest. And that's just, as in the mythology, you know, we hug the demon, we kiss the demon, and turns into a princess. We'll meet the demons on the way, but our attitude can be different. And it's a kind of shift from a mind that's dominated by survival to a mind that's dominated by relationship and being with and allowing life. Choose life, as in the Bible. So in our spiritual journey, the image, the Dharma image of trust is of like a jewel that you put in muddy water and it purifies the water, the water becomes clear and pure. And trust, and in a way faith, is something that will clear the mud of confusion and struggle and stress and the mud. It kind of gives some clarity, gives some direction, and it settles things instead of disturbance that disturbs everything. Struggle, fighting, moving, you know, it settles. Trust is settling, it's being with. And so, the thing is, it is. I remember that someone told me, it was a Dharma person, and in a one-to-one said, I don't know what to do. I'm a social worker, but every time I go into an Arab village in Israel, I have a primal fear, and it really stops me, my work. I just can't help it. It's very deep down in me. And we were talking about a shift in the attitude. I said, okay, but if you look at one person that you meet in the Arab town, just stop and talk to somebody and just meet one person. Don't think about Arabs. Think just first have a cup of coffee with one person and stop and see your feelings and see how it is for you. See your fears. Then next time have a cup of coffee with another person. And of course, in the end, he was having a cup of coffee with everybody. He was absolutely fine. Things are as they are. We have to allow things to be what they are. Look deeply from a place of connection. Look at the problem directly. You are as you are, this demon, this problem, this issue, this sickness, this crazy thoughts, this mikhsholim that on the journey. You are as you are. I want to see you. I allow you to be what you are. I want to hug you. Now let me look and see who you are. Doesn't matter whether there's someone in the street that's just shouting at you. Let me see who you are. You are as you are. I'm not going to first attitude shut you down, stop you, get rid of you, run away, fight you. First, allow you to be what you are. Now let me look and see. So it's about relationship. It's about letting the world in, not keeping the world out. So let's look at the path and the spiritual journey and our practice. This trust is about let the path take us, basically. It's take me. And I don't think that we can really develop too much if we have constant inner doubt and confusion and resistance to our spiritual journey. And again, our inner development, shall we say. And again, it doesn't necessarily have to be Dharma. It happens that the Dharma has really a lot of experience, the powers of trust and the powers of insight and the powers of wisdom and so on. But I think any path of inner development that we're talking about, we need this same quality of letting the path take us, because it ripens in its own way and its own time. We are not in control of it. The old tired me, this boring old me, wants to take charge of everything and wants to be the boss also of our spiritual journey, but it can't do that. It's like trying to be the boss of the world, like the, you know, the story of the what?
No, you said the story of that. I said Donald Trump.
Yeah, good enough. Little Prince, I was going to say. things ripen in their own way, and we're not in control of so much, and the self wants to be in control, but it's the fear that makes the self want to be in control. And if we understand the dukkha, we can let go of that. We can say, okay, that there's a lot that the self cannot be in control of, including the spiritual path, what is going to happen, what will happen, and how it's going to progress. And we have to allow the path to be wiser than us, like in the Chinese saying, you know, that we allow the path to be wiser than us. Things unfold in their time. It's karma that's in charge, not me. You know, for some of us that might be mostly disappointing, problematic. What? You mean I can't, you know, then does it matter if I meditate or don't meditate? You know, if karma's in charge, well, maybe I don't need to do anything. I just sort of wait for karma to bring me enlightenment. But again, it's not about not doing. It's about doing. And it's about being the best we can be, manifesting the qualities that we know are wise and helpful, but letting go of results, letting karma take us, letting things take us. But of course, we do what we need to do. If we're sick, we need to take the medicine. If we're on the journey of spiritual journey, we need to practice. But what exactly happens, how it happens, how fast it happens, when it happens, what will happen exactly, we have to let go. And letting go, again, is a power. It's not passive, negative state. It's because the self can't deal with what's beyond itself. So the best thing to do is let go. And when we let go more, we find we're letting go into an ocean. We're not just stopping, we're letting go into. There isn't such a thing as letting something go and in nothing, into nothing. We always let go into. Because we let go of something and then something else opens up. That's life. It's important to remember that. Letting go is letting go into, is letting go from resistance into another place. So I just tell you a small story which I've told a few times again. I keep telling the same stories, but never mind. Too bad. But it was for me a very powerful lesson. So it's a story of many years ago when I was practicing on my own in India, and I was weeks sitting in a tiny little room practicing. And I really felt that I was on the edge of a huge space, and I really wanted to jump into it, and I didn't know how. It really felt there, like just here, like here. It was this tehom with this, but some vast place that I wanted to get to. And so I kept going there and finding, you know, stop, too scary, frightening. So there was an Indian teacher that kept now and then turned up, and I asked him about it, and he said, well, keep going to that place and the edge and just stay there with trust. Just keep going to the edge. You'll have fear. Stay there quietly with the fear or with no fear, and just have some trust and keep going again and again. And also don't forget basic happiness. And he said, that's the power. So what happened in the end, of course, was that I realized the whole thing was just a construction. There was no tehom, there was no place to jump, there wasn't any need to have this duality of me here and a kind of a great big Makom Ultimativi kind of somewhere else. It wasn't. It was all an illusion. Nowhere to jump to. But it was a good lesson for me about trust and fear in the spiritual path. And so you really need a kind of surrender. Kniya is actually an understanding that you can't get it. It needs to get you. And just kind of think about that. You can't get it. It needs to get you. If you want to jump to new places, to different places, to beyond yourself and beyond your habits and beyond the usual mind, you can't force that jump. And surrender does the job instead of control. So one place we need to practice this is in taking refuge. Taking refuge, finding our deeper home again and again and again. We're in traffic, Ayalon, Pakuk, sitting in the car, thinking, I have a meeting, stuck, and begins all the resistance that, oh, ooh, irritation, it's not working, I wish it would start, I wish they'd do something, I wish the government would do another road, I wish people would stay at home and not get on this road with me. Then remember, take refuge, arrive home. Let go. Ah, okay. I'm not in control of this. Take me. Just, this is what's happening. There's nothing I can do. So I'll just relax. I'll let go. I'll feel at home in this uncontrollable life. And a very sweet meditation will come out of that as you sit in the car. A lovely sense of no control, illusion of control. I remember not long ago, my granddaughter, teenage, she loves to want to go to the Kazeh Canyonim, and I usually resist. But this time, I'm sort of got myself dragged into the canyon. And I was sitting there, Naria Canyon Arena. And she was hours choosing shampoo. I don't know what. Exactly the right shampoo or exactly the right. And I was sitting there and I really felt aversion. I didn't feel very healthy. I somehow felt bad. And I was sitting there hours, ages, waiting. I didn't know where she was. I couldn't get her out. I didn't know which shop she was in. Everything began to look so ifsa. The people running about, buying and all that. And then I sort of took a stop and I said, wait a minute, shift the view, take a breath, I'm home. This is home. I'm back home. Here I am at home, why not? And it, you know, of course, changed the attitude totally. And I just saw the kids running about, doing the best thing they can, wanting to be happy, and the mothers struggling a bit, pushing their children, dragging the children, and the workers there, they're having to be there all day in these conditions, and for the sake of a few shekels, working all day in the shops, and I kind of it changed to compassion and some sense of being with things and so on. But I did remember it needed me to remember to take refuge, to come back home in a way. So we need to trust and come take refuge again and again in things, never mind if sometimes they feel awkward or difficult or problematic. I think it's where we need to take refuge in our teachers. We need to give, and this is a bit of a sensitive point, but because I'm a teacher, so I'm sitting here in this role. Never mind, I don't worry about this. But to have some sense of trusting teachers is important, because then you will see the bigger side of a teacher. A teacher as a human being will be small and big at the same time. So sometimes people say, well, okay, you know, he's not such a good teacher, I saw him getting angry, or her. Oh, the teacher, yes, but, you know, if you really look, you'll see they're just a human being, and so, just the Buddha. There was a story just recently where someone I know met a really good teacher, and a good teacher looked at this person, and this person was wanting to show something that they had done in relation to the Dharma. And the teacher sort of looked at this person and what they'd done and said, no good, not enough compassion. And this person was deeply offended and said, this person, this teacher, no good teacher, look what they said. How can they say that? I don't want to have anything to do with them anymore. They're not. How can they be like that? But that teacher has maybe an insight, which is immediate, which is comes like that, because of maybe 40 years practice. There is a seeing which is not clear how that seeing happens, but the seeing coming from a consciousness, which cuts through like a knife and says the right thing at the right time. So it's an example that of, in a way, taking refuge in the teacher. This doesn't mean that you have to kind of bow down to the teachers, and the teachers don't want it anyway, and no one's interested in super... I mean, not in our tradition. In some other traditions, yes, there is a lot more guru worship and so on, but we're not interested in that. That doesn't help. But having a certain sense of trust in the teacher and a little bit of refuge in the teacher will help you. The teacher doesn't care, but it helps us, me, to feel like that towards teachers. It allows the teacher to actually teach and communicate on another level, which if there was too much, oh, they're just, you know, resistance, doubt, negativity and so on, then the teacher wouldn't be able to bring the teaching. So one more point before I talk in practical, more practice. One of the places where trust gets lost is in confusions. And when we're in doubt, when we feel doubt. And we're going to have a session after this about this whole area of trust the Dharma. But when there's confusion, it's quite difficult. We get a feeling of everything stopping, of being stuck, of being lost. And it can easily happen. We, for example, our meditation can be week after week kind of flat, rather boring, nothing much happening, no real change. And we think, oh, it's not working, the Dharma is, I better go and look for shamanism, I better go and, I have to urgently go off to Tibet, I have to energize, it's not working for me, or I give up, or I just say this whole thing. So doubt can undo things, and instead of that we need to be friendly with doubt. Trust doubt. It's coming as a voice, we trust it. It's coming with some resistance. It's telling us something. It's the unconscious coming up and telling us things. Turn to it. Say, okay, I hear you. Let me look at you. Let me see what you're saying. Let me understand this voice in me that is the self saying doubt. And let it work in me and take me to a new place. Like in the Zen phrase, great doubt, great enlightenment. Small doubt, small enlightenment. Great doubt, great enlightenment. Let it stay there. I'm not against you. I am listening to you. I'm listening to your voice. Let it stay there. Let me rest in that place of doubt. Quietly. Turning it into a question, turning it into a movement, rather than labeling it as a problem. Sometimes it is a problem, but we don't solve the problem of doubt by letting it rule us. We solve the problem of doubt by resting in it, looking at it, holding it in our hand and saying, yeah, who are you? Let me be with you. So I want to talk a little bit about practice. The first thing to say is, and it's a bit of a list of practical things to do with trust. First, we need to work very clearly with non-trust. With non-trust, meaning fear, anxiety, resistance. We really need to see them clearly as they are. So in the subtle place I've mentioned before about thought, so we're sitting doing meditation and the thought's giving us hell. So we need to, and we want to stop the thought, we want to shut down the thought, and we want something else. We need to look carefully at that place, look at our resistance, look at our dukkha, open the box, even label, give a label in the Mahasi method of noting resistance, resistance, resistance. Give it a label. Noisy mind, okay, that's what's there. I see you. So if we feel resistance, we want something to be different, we're against something inside us, we need to see that clearly. We're afraid, we're anxious, we're survival mind. Just let it be there. So the first thing is the basic vipassana, to see what's going on exactly. And not to believe it, but to really see it. And what that goes with is something that we often forget, which is when something shifts, it always opens a space. So in terms of the Four Noble Truths, when we shift an attachment, for example, to anxiety or concern, when that attachment is loosened, it moves to the Third Noble Truth. The Second Noble Truth, when it becomes looser, it moves to the Third Noble Truth, truth of awakening. There will always be an opening somewhere when we let go of something that we're stuck with. But very often we don't notice it because we're sort of jumping to the next thing. So, second point is always look for a place of relief, a place of releasing an attachment, a stuckness, give it space, give it interest. It may be very small. It may be just, ah, okay. Thank goodness I'm out of that. Ah, relief. Hakala. Okay. Give it interest, these places. Because they're the voices of freedom. The third thing, kind of already mentioned, constantly surrender to things as they are. Kneya, keep surrendering. Just like in the traffic jam, the pkak and the ayalon I mentioned. Everything shifts if we surrender. Let go, take me. No resistance, no struggle. I'm with you. Whatever experience it is, I'm there. Take me. And it's sometimes very difficult to remember that. But surrender is so important. Surrender, you know, in the end, all our practice becomes surrender. In the end. I know that that's a difficult thing to understand, but at a kind of very subtle level of the beyond, then there isn't anything that anybody can get. And surrender is the only thing left to do. If you can sort of think about that a bit, let it touch you. In the end, that's the only practice. All the practice before that sort of gets purified, mezukkak, refined, and all that's left is surrender. Because when you're in the bigness, what else can you do? It's nothing to get, it's nothing to have, it's nothing to obtain, just surrender. So keep surrendering wherever you are as an active practice that will help transformation. And then I read yesterday a little piece from one of the Buddhist texts called Teachings to King Melinda. I think Melinda, you know the book? Is that the Melinda, I think his name is. It's a Greek, it's a whole interesting text about a Greek king that was discussing with a Buddhist monk, Nagasena, and they were just having dialogues, endless dialogues. And the king kept saying, give me an example, give me an example. So the book is packed with examples, which are so nice. And there was an example there that was about how to act from a place to create trust in your actions. And the example was exactly the example of in the Bible of Nachshon, who walked into the Yam Suf, the first person. And because he went into the water, the whole of Am Yisrael could go after him, right? So the same example in this book. You should be like the one that takes the first step. The whole crowd, everybody else, is standing afraid. Put your foot in the water and start. And then they'll all follow you. So it's like we have to, in a way, it's fake it in order to make it. We make a step, even if we're not ready. Even if we think we're not, it's too much for us. Sometimes we make the step. We go forward even if we think we're not really ready. This is certainly true in action in life. And a final practice or a final advice about practice is equanimity. And equanimity is another huge subject. But don't forget that it's based on acceptance. And the phrase that we use in equanimity that's just, you know, the phrases that we use in equanimity practice are relevant here. First, a phrase about myself. I love and accept myself just as I am right now. Just gives a tone. It doesn't mean you have to say the phrase, the equanimity phrases, but it gives a sense of there isn't any other place to be other than I love and accept myself just as I am right now. This is a place where from which we go out into the world. And the other phrase, which is also an example of an attitude of mind and heart, is may I not be disturbed by the coming and going of events, circumstances. Again, things are not in control. We're not in control. So we can feel equanimity. I'm not in disturbance. Just like the example of the being in the traffic. Okay, I think that's what I'm going to say for the moment.